Everything had seemed so good when Georgie fell asleep last night. Better than good. Maybe better than ever. Which was weird. When she was talking to Neil in the past, they got along better than they did in their shared past or their shared present. Maybe these were the versions of themselves that were meant to be together. Mature Georgie and mostly unjaded Neil. Too bad they couldn't go on this way. How long could this go on? It was December 23rd. Georgie knew what happened back in 1998. Neil ended up on her doorstep on Christmas Day. That meant that Neil, landline Neil, would have to leave Omaha tomorrow morning in the past to propose to her. Would that still happen? Would Neil still propose? Or had Georgie screwed that up an hour ago in one fell swoop of Seth? Maybe she'd screwed it up the very first time she called Neil in the past. Yesterday, Georgie had wondered if she was supposed to talk Neil out of loving her, if that was the point of this magic, to save him from her. But what if she'd talked him out of it just by opening her mouth? She was thinking in hot, helpless circles when Heather walked back down the steps into the laundry room. She was carrying one of those Campbell's soups that you can heat up in the microwave, then drink out of the can. Chicken and stars. "Do you ever feed yourself?" Heather asked. "Or does Neil just set out a dish for you every morning?" "Sometimes I order things," Georgie said. "What do you feed the girls?"
"Neil feeds the girls."
"What if Neil isn't home?"
"Yogurt."
Heather handed Georgie the soup, a peace offering, then sat down next to her against the washer.
"Thanks," Georgie said.
Heather still looked wary of Georgie. She took a deep breath and let it out through her teeth.
"I know something's going on, so you may as well tell me. Are you sleeping with Seth?"
Georgie took a sip of soup and burned her mouth.
"No."
"Do you have a boyfriend who sort of sounds like your husband but isn't your husband but is also named Neil?"
"No."
"Is something really weird going on?"
Georgie turned her head toward Heather and tipped it against the dryer.
"Yeah." Heather mirrored it, laying her head against the washer.
"I can't even remember you without Neil," she said.
Georgie nodded slowly, then took another, more careful drink of soup.
"You were in our wedding, you know. Do you remember?"
"I think so," Heather said, "but I might just be remembering the photos." Heather was supposed to be the flower girl, but none of Georgie's friends had been able to afford the trip to Nebraska, so Heather became her only bridesmaid, besides Seth, who just assumed he'd be standing up for Georgie. Georgie wasn't even sure she should invite Seth, because the wedding was in Omaha, and because Neil, but Seth started calling himself Georgie's best man, and she wasn't sure how to argue. He wore a brown three-piece suit and a pale green tie to the wedding. Heather wore lavender shantung and a green cardigan. Seth carried her down the aisle. And he insisted that Heather come along for Georgie's bachelorette party, a bridal party-only dinner at some thousand-year-old Italian restaurant near Neil's house. They ate spaghetti with sugar-sweet tomato sauce, and Seth talked nonstop about the sitcom he was working on, the one he'd just convinced to hire Georgie. Georgie drank too much Paisano, and Heather fell asleep at the table.
"Good thing I'm the designated driver," Seth said.
There was a photo from the next day at the ceremony of Seth signing the marriage certificate as Georgie's witness. Heather was standing on tiptoe to watch. Seth in his brown waistcoat, Georgie in her white dress, Neil beaming. Georgie took another gulp of soup.
"You were adorable," she told Heather. "I think you thought it was your wedding. Neil danced with you, and you blushed the whole time."
"I remember that," Heather said. "I mean, I've seen the pictures. I looked just like new me." Georgie and Neil hadn't had a traditional church wedding or much of a reception. They got married in Neil's backyard. The lilacs were in bloom, and Georgie carried a handful of branches that his mom had gathered into a bouquet. Everything was on the cheap. She and Neil had both just graduated, and Georgie didn't start on the sitcom until they got back from their honeymoon. 5 days in rural Nebraska, in a cabin somebody owned on a muddy river. The five best days. They'd tried to pay for the whole wedding themselves. Her mom and Kendrick were already digging deep to buy plane tickets, and Georgie didn't want to ask Neil's parents for help. Georgie was the one who suggested they get married in Omaha. She knew Neil would like it. Their breakup, their almost breakup, was still fresh in her memory, and Georgie wanted Neil to look back on their wedding day and feel happy about all of it. She wanted him to be happy that day, to be completely in his element. Neil's family ended up helping out anyway. His parents bought the cake, and his aunts made cream cheese mints and sandwiches. The pastor who'd baptized and confirmed Neil was there to marry them. After the ceremony, Neil's dad moved his stereo out onto the patio and played DJ. The only song Georgie insisted on was Leather and Lace. That had started out as a joke. Leather and Lace was playing in a restaurant on one of their first dates, and Georgie cracked herself up by telling Neil that it was our song. Then they both tried, and failed, to think of a more ridiculous our song. Neil suggested Gypsies, Tramps, and Thieves. Georgie pushed for the theme from Taxi. After that, Leather and Lace kept coming on the radio at significant moments in their relationship. Once when Neil was kissing her in the car outside her mom's house. Once on a road trip to San Francisco. Once when Georgie thought she was pregnant and they were waiting in line at Walgreens to buy a clear blue Easy. Neil with his hand on her back. Georgie holding the pregnancy test like it was a pack of gum. Stevie Nicks crooning about having her own life and being stronger than you know. At some point, Leather and Lace just became their song. For real. When it started to play on their wedding day, on Neil's parents' patio, Georgie got all choked up. Was that the moment she realized she was actually getting married? Or was it just the moment she realized she'd landed a guy who would dance with her, totally sincerely, forehead to forehead, to Leather and Lace, Stay With Me, Stay. After Leather and Lace, Neil danced with his mom to Moon River, the Andy Williams version. Then Georgie danced with Seth, and Neil danced with Heather, to Both Sides Now, the Judy Collins version. A few hours later, when everyone else had gone or gone inside, Seth left for the airport right after the cake. Neil and Georgie stayed out on the patio, slow dancing to whatever came on the oldies station. They'd never really danced together before that day, or since. And truthfully, they weren't doing much dancing even then. Neil held Georgie with one hand on the small of her back and one on the back of her neck, and Georgie leaned against him with both hands on his chest, and they swayed from side to side. It wasn't dancing. It was just a way to make the wedding last, a way to stay in the moment, rolling it over and over in their heads. We're married now. We're married. You don't know when you're 23. You don't know what it really means to crawl into someone else's life and stay there. You can't see all the ways you're going to get tangled, how you're going to bond skin to skin, how the idea of separating will feel in 5 years, in 10, in 15. When Georgie thought about divorce now, she imagined lying side by side with Neil on two operating tables while a team of doctors tried to unthread their vascular systems. She didn't know at 23. That day, out on the patio, it just felt like the biggest day of her life so far, not the biggest day of her life from now on, not the day that would change everything. That would change her at a cellular level, like a virus that rewrites your DNA. That day,
that evening, out on the patio. Georgie pretended to dance. She clung to Neil's shirt. They rubbed their noses together.
"You're my wife," Neil said,
and then he laughed, and she tried to catch his dimples with her teeth, like if she caught them, she might get to keep them. "Yours," she said. Maybe Georgie had gotten a glimpse of it then, the way infinity unspooled from where they were swaying, the way everything she was ever going to be from then on was irrevocably tethered to that day, that decision. Neil was wearing a navy blue suit, and he'd waited to get his hair cut until the day before the wedding, so it was a little too short. "Yours," she said. Neil squeezed the back of her neck.
"Mine."
The dryer stopped. "I've never been in love," Heather said. "I don't think I'm susceptible." Georgie set down her soup can and pushed her glasses up to rub her eyes. "How could you possibly know that?" Heather shrugged. "Well, it hasn't happened yet, has it? Maybe you haven't ordered enough pizza." "I'm being serious, Georgie." "Okay. Seriously, Heather, you're only 18. You have plenty of time to fall in love." "Mom said she had been in love 3 times by my age." "Well," Georgie frowned, "she's unusually susceptible. She's got a compromised immune system when it comes to love." Heather played with the drawstring on her sweatshirt. "I haven't even really dated anybody yet."
"Have you tried?" Georgie asked.
Her sister wrinkled her nose. "I don't want to try. It'll happen in college." "You dated in high school," Heather insisted. "Did you fall in love before Neil?"
"Why are you asking me this?"
"Because I need to talk to somebody," Heather said, "and Mom is aberrant."
"Can't you talk to your friends?"
"My friends are at least as clueless as I am. Did you fall in love before Neil?"
Georgie thought about it.
There was a guy in the 11th grade who'd been something more than just another moving target for a few weeks. Then it passed. And then there were the years she'd sat on the couch with Seth.
"Maybe," Georgie said.
"Maybe I came really close to falling in love, cumulatively, over 2 or 3 relationships."
"But not like with Neil?"
"Not like with Neil."
"How do you know he was the one?"
"I didn't know. I don't think either of us knew." Heather rolled her eyes.
"Neil knew. He proposed to you."
"It's not like that," Georgie said. "You'll see. It's more like you meet someone and you fall in love and you hope that that person is the one. And then at some point, you have to put down your chips. You just have to make a commitment and hope that you're right."
"No one else describes love that way," Heather frowned. "Maybe you're doing it wrong."
"Obviously, I'm doing it wrong," Georgie said. "But I still think love feels that way for most people."
"So you think most people bet everything, their whole lives, on hope, just hoping that what they're feeling is real?"
"Real isn't relevant," Georgie said, turning completely to face Heather. "It's like you're tossing a ball between you, and you're just hoping you can keep it in the air. And it has nothing to do with whether you love each other or not. If you didn't love each other, you wouldn't be playing this stupid game with the ball.
You love each other, and you just hope you can keep the ball in play."
"What's the ball a metaphor for?"
"I'm not sure," Georgie said. "The relationship? Marriage?"
"You're really depressing," Heather said.
"Maybe you shouldn't be talking about marriage to someone whose husband just left her."
"He didn't leave you," Heather said. "He's just visiting his mom."
Georgie looked down at the empty soup can in her lap.
"I keep waiting for you to say that it's all worth it," Heather said.
Georgie swallowed. "That's a meaningless thing to say." They sat quietly for a minute until one of the pugs, the bulging, pregnant one, scuttled down the stairs into the laundry room. Watching a pug run downstairs is a lot like watching a pug fall downstairs. Georgie winced and looked away.
It ran over to her and froze, barking aggressively.
I don't like you either, she said, turning back to the dog.
It's the shirt, Heather said. She hates that shirt.
Georgie looked down at the pug that was bedazzled on her borrowed shirt.
They're very territorial, Heather said. Here, move. Let her climb into the dryer.
I may not like her, Georgie said, but I don't want to cook her.
She likes it, Heather said, pushing Georgie over and opening the dryer door. It's warm.
She lifted the dog into the dryer on top of the clothes.
What if it's too hot in there? Then she'll jump out.
This is so dangerous, Georgie said. What if you don't know she's in there and you start the dryer?
We check first.
I wouldn't have checked.
Well, now you will. Look, she likes it.
Georgie watched the little dog settle down on a pile of darks, glad that her own clothes were still in the washer. She frowned at the dog, then at Heather.
Remind me never to ask you to babysit again.
Georgie's bra fell apart completely in the washing machine. Her mom had a speed queen with an old-fashioned agitator, and the loose underwire had wrapped around the center and caught on something inside the drum. Georgie yanked the wire free. It hadn't even been 90 minutes since Neil hung up on her. He might not have made it to his aunt's nursing home in Iowa yet. Georgie couldn't just sit here, waiting all day. She should go to work. God, no, she couldn't deal with Seth right now. She held up the bra, trying to decide whether she could get by on one underwire. Then she shoved it into the dryer with the rest of her clothes, dislocating the pug first, and ran back into the house. Heather was sitting on the couch, messing with her phone.
Do you want to go to the mall? Georgie asked.
On the day before Christmas Eve? Sure, that sounds like a great idea.
Okay, let's go.
Heather was already narrowing her eyes. She narrowed them to a squint.
Aren't you going to put on a bra?
I'm going to the mall to buy a bra.
Why don't you just go home and pick up some clothes?
Georgie thought of her house, sitting dark and too far away, almost everything just as Neil had left it.
I need to get back here before Neil calls.
So take your phone with you.
He's calling here. Are you coming?
Nah, Heather said. I'll stay. That way there's somebody to answer the phone when Neil calls. She put his name in air quotes. They frowned at each other.
Come with me, Georgie said. I'll buy you something.
What?
I might have to go to the Apple store.
Heather leapt up from the couch, then froze.
I can't be bribed. I won't keep your dirty secrets.
I don't have any dirty secrets. Georgie's cell phone was still plugged into the car lighter and woke up as soon as she turned on the car. She had 7 missed calls and 4 voicemails from Seth, plus 2 missed calls and 1 voicemail from Neil's cell. Georgie stopped, halfway in her mom's driveway and halfway in the street, to play that voicemail. She held her breath, waiting to hear Neil's voice, to hear now Neil's voice.
Mom?
It was Alice.
Grandma wants to know if we're allowed to watch Star Wars Episode 5. I told her yes, but she said there's a lot of violence. And Daddy went to see Grandpa at the cemetery, and he didn't take his phone, so we can't get his permission. I told Grandma it's okay, that we just close our eyes when Luke cuts Darth Vader's head off, but she doesn't believe me. So call us back, okay? I love you.
Alice kissed into the phone.
Bye.
Georgie set the phone down on the dashboard and backed into the street.
Are you okay? Heather asked.
I'm fine, Georgie said, shoving her glasses up and wiping one eye with the back of her hand.
'Cause we just left the house and you're already driving like an asshole.
I'm fine, Georgie said. Chapter 21. There was no parking at the mall. They circled and circled before they found a spot. Then Georgie opened her glove compartment and dug out her driver's license and credit card.
Don't you have a purse? Heather asked. I'm not usually in purse-necessary situations.
I thought moms were supposed to carry big purses with first aid kits and packets of Cheerios.
Georgie scowled at her.
You're practically homeless, Heather said, aren't you? If Neil doesn't come back, you're gonna have to forage for food and water.
Georgie shoved the phone and cards into her pocket. We're not wasting time here, she said. There won't be any hanging out at the Orange Julius scamming for hot guys.
I'm not 12, Georgie.
In and out. We get the bra, we get a new battery for my phone, and we're out of there.
Are you buying me a new phone? Because I think I'd rather have an iPad.
Who said I was buying you a phone?
It was implied. Besides, Mom says you're good for it.
Just hurry. I don't want to miss Neil.
Jingle Bell Rock was playing inside the mall, and inside the store, and inside the dressing room in the intimates department. There was already a jumble of bras on the floor, and Georgie was trying on more, facing away from the mirror. She was so distracted, she kept forgetting to pay attention to which ones fit.
Just pick one, Georgie, or buy them all. It doesn't matter. You're just killing time.
Jesus, what a weird way to kill time. The fate of her future hung in the balance, and there was nothing she could do at the moment but run out the clock. At least, not until Neil called back.
He would call back, right?
What if he didn't? What if he was too angry? What if he was still angry tomorrow morning?
Georgie had to talk to Neil, to make things right again. She had to make sure that he still got into his car tomorrow, his tomorrow, and showed up at her door on Christmas Day.
But what if he didn't?
Did Georgie really believe that the last 15 years would just unravel? Had she committed so completely to this bizarre scenario that she thought her marriage was going to start fading out, like Marty McFly in the middle of Earth Angel? What else could she think? She had to keep playing along. The stakes were too high. If Neil didn't show up to propose to her in 1998, 22-year-old Georgie would never know what she was missing. That girl thought it was already over, that she'd already lost him. Georgie collapsed that week after Neil left for Omaha. She spent the whole time in a fog, lying on her bed, deliberately not calling him. Why should she call him? What was she supposed to say? Sorry? Georgie wasn't sorry. She wasn't sorry that she knew what she wanted to do with her life. She wasn't sorry that she was making it happen. It's not like Neil was offering her some compelling alternate plan. Georgie, I want to be a sheep farmer. It's in my blood, and I can't do it anywhere but Montana.
Was that where sheep were farmed?
I need you. Come with me.
No, Neil was saying, I hate it here. I hate this. I hate that you want this.
All he was offering Georgie were negatives. And then he'd taken even those off the table. He'd left without her, broken up with her on his way out of town. Georgie had genuinely believed they were broken up. For the first few days that Neil was gone, she felt it like an actual breach between her ribs, a tear at the bottom of her lungs. Georgie would wake up in a panic, sure that she'd run out of air or that she'd lost the ability to hold it inside of her. Then the breath would hit her like a baseball to the heart. The air was right there. She just had to think about it. In, out, in, out. She wondered if she was going to have to spend the rest of her life reminding herself to breathe. Maybe that would be her internal monologue from now on. In, out, in, out. Neil didn't call to apologize to Georgie that week either. Why should he? She thought at the time. What did he have to apologize for? For not wanting exactly what Georgie wanted? For realizing what his limitations were? Good for him for knowing himself so well. Good for him for figuring it out. Neil loved her. Georgie knew that. He couldn't keep his hands off her. He couldn't keep his ink off her. He was always doodling on her stomach or her thigh or her shoulder.
He kept a set of Prismacolor markers by his bed, and when Georgie took a shower, the water ran rainbows. She knew Neil loved her. Good for him for realizing it wasn't enough to make him happy. That was very mature of him. He was probably saving them both a lot of heartache. Oh, God. Oh, God. Oh, God. In, out. In, out. In, out. Stay with me, stay. By that Christmas morning, Georgie hadn't made any emotional progress from the breakup. She wasn't feeling any better or stronger. She was pretty sure that every Christmas from then on would be tainted by Neil leaving, like Georgie would never be able to hear Jingle Bells again without feeling Neil drive away from her with a tow chain in her stomach. Seth kept calling to check on her, but she didn't want to talk to him. She didn't want to hear him tell her how much better off she was without Neil. Georgie wasn't better off. Even if Neil was right, even if they'd never make it work together, even if they were fundamentally wrong for each other, still, she wasn't better off without him. Even if your heart is broken and attacking you, you're still not better off without it. Her mom made Georgie come out to the living room Christmas morning to watch Heather open her presents. Heather was 3, just old enough to understand that everything under the tree was for her. Georgie sat on the couch in flannel pajama pants and a ratty t-shirt and ate pancakes with her fingers. Kendrick was there. He was still new then. He brought Georgie a movie theater gift certificate with a bow on it. Heather got a talking Teletubby, which she was currently spazzing out over. He, Kendrick, not the Teletubby, kept trying to talk to Georgie, and he was trying so hard, Georgie didn't have the heart to ignore him. But she didn't have any heart at all, so that made conversation difficult. When the doorbell rang, Kendrick jumped up to answer it, probably just to get away from Georgie.
"It's your friend Neil," he said,
when he came back to the living room.
"You mean Seth," she said.
Kendrick scratched his goatee. He used to have a ridiculous goatee.
"Neil's the little one, right?"
Georgie set down her plate and got off the couch.
"Why didn't you invite him in?" her mom asked Kendrick.
"He said he'd rather wait outside."
Georgie didn't believe it was Neil. She couldn't believe it was Neil. First of all, because Neil was in Omaha. He wouldn't have skipped Christmas in Omaha. And second, because they were broken up. And third, because if Georgie did believe it was Neil, and then it turned out that it wasn't, that might be it. That might finish her. The front door was still open when she got there. Neil was standing on the other side of the screen, biting his lip and squinting up her block like he was waiting for her to come from the other direction. Neil. Neil, Neil, Neil. Georgie's hand trembled as she pushed the screen door open. Neil turned to her, and his eyes got wide, almost like he hadn't let himself believe it was really going to be her. He took a step back, so Georgie stepped out onto the front porch. She wanted to grab him. It was probably safe to grab him. Neil probably hadn't come to her house on Christmas morning just to break up with her extra hard, right? He wouldn't have come back just to tell her he was leaving. Neil's eyes were thin, and his face was tight. He looked like she was still hurting him.
"Georgie," he said.
Georgie started crying instantly, from 0 to 11.
"Neil."
Neil shook his head, and she jerked forward to hug him. Even if he had come, just to make sure she knew they were really over, Georgie was going to get one more desperate embrace out of this. His arms came around her shoulders, and he held her so tight, they rocked back and forth.
"Georgie,"
Neil said, then started pulling away. She didn't let him.
"Georgie,"
he said.
"Wait."
"No."
"Yes. Wait, I need to do something."
She still didn't let go. Neil had to unwind her arms and take a step back. As soon as he was away, he dropped to one knee. Georgie thought maybe he was going to apologize, that he was falling at her feet. "No," she said, "you don't have to."
"Shh, just let me do this."
"Neil."
"Georgie, please."
She folded her arms and looked miserable. She didn't want him to say he was sorry. That would take them right back into the heart of their sorry situation.
"Georgie," he said, "I love you. I love you more than I hate everything else. We'll make our own enough. Will you marry me?"
Georgie stopped, in the middle of fastening a bra behind her back, and turned to face herself in the dressing room mirror. Oh. Chapter 22. Christmas. On one knee, looking straight through her.
"We'll make our own enough," he'd said.
Last night on the telephone, Georgie had asked Neil if love was enough, and 15 years ago, he'd answered her. Could that just be a coincidence? Or did it mean that it had already happened? That this, all of this, the phone calls, the fighting, the four-hour conversations, had already happened. For Neil, 15 years ago. What if Georgie wasn't disrupting the timeline with these phone calls? What if this was the timeline? What if it had been the timeline all along?
"We'll make our own enough,"
Neil had said that day at her door. Georgie remembered him saying it, remembered that it sounded nice, but all she was focused on at the time was the ring in his hand. Could it be that Neil was referring to a conversation he'd thought she was a part of? "What if it isn't enough?" Georgie asked him last night.
"We'll make our own enough,"
he promised her in 1998.
"Will you marry me?"
Chapter 23. Oh. Georgie gaped at herself in the mirror. "Oh my God," she gasped.
"It can't be that bad," Heather said from outside the fitting room. "You're not even 40.
"No, I..." Georgie walked out of the mauve cubicle, pulling her mother's pug sweatshirt down over her head. "I need to go home now."
"I thought Neil was calling you at our house."
"Right, I need to go there, now." The attendant met them just outside the room.
"Did any of those work out?"
"This one's fine," Georgie said. She reached under her shirt and snapped the tags off the bra, handing them to the salesperson. "I'll take this one." She started walking toward the cash register. Neil had never told Georgie why he changed his mind, why he forgave her, why he came back to California and proposed, and Georgie had never asked. She wanted to give him an opportunity to reconsider. But maybe this was why. Maybe she was why. Now.
"I'm sorry," the salesperson said. "I can't let you wear that out. Store policy."
Georgie stared at her. She was a thin, white woman, a little younger than Georgie, with taupe-colored lipstick. She'd kept trying to come into the dressing room with Georgie to make sure the bras were fitting correctly. "But I'm buying it," Georgie said.
"I'm sorry, ma'am. Store policy."
"Fine," Georgie said. "I need to go. I'll just take it off and do all this some other day."
"But you already removed the tags. You have to purchase it."
"Right," Georgie nodded. "Fine." She reached up behind her to unclasp the bra, then after a few seconds of maneuvering, pulled it out one of her sleeves and dropped it on the counter.
"Ring it up twice," Heather said. "She'll take two."
The salesperson went to get another bra.
"You are such a badass," Heather said, grinning at her. "Have I mentioned that I want to be you when I grow up?"
"I don't have time for this. We need to leave. Now."
"But we were going to the Apple store."
Georgie, please, I want an iPad. I've already named it.
You can order it online. We need to leave.
Seriously? You're really buying me an iPad? Can I also order a pony?
When Neil left California that Christmas, he and Georgie were as good as broken up, and when he came back, he wanted to marry her. And in between, maybe this, maybe her. Maybe this week, these phone calls, everything, had already happened. Somehow, sometime. And Georgie just had to make sure that it happened again.
Georgie? Hey.
Heather shoved the bag of bras into Georgie's chest. Georgie caught them.
Sorry to interrupt your aneurysm, Heather said, but you said that time was of the essence here.
Right, Georgie said. Right. She followed Heather to the car, then handed her the key fob. You drive.
Why? Heather asked.
I need to think. Georgie climbed into the passenger seat and tapped her dead phone against her chin. She didn't even bother plugging it in. Chapter 24. Georgie set the yellow rotary phone in front of her on the bed and stared at it. She resisted the urge to check the dial tone, just in case Neil called at that exact second. This changed everything. Didn't it? If Neil had already proposed to her in the past, then Georgie must have already convinced him in the future. It didn't matter what happened now, what she said, whether he called her back. Whatever Georgie did next actually already happened. She was walking in her own footsteps. There was nothing she could mess up. She leaned close to the phone and lifted the receiver to her ear, slamming it down again as soon as she heard a dial tone. Is that what this whole week was about? Preserving the status quo? Maybe she should be grateful for that. But Georgie had thought, she'd hoped, that this wrinkle in time was offering her a shot at something better. God, what good is a magic phone anyway? It isn't a time machine. Georgie couldn't change the past. She could only talk at it. If Georgie had a proper time machine, maybe she could actually fix her marriage. She could go back to the moment that everything started to go bad and change course. Except, there hadn't really been a moment like that. Things didn't go bad between Georgie and Neil. Things were always bad, and always good. Their marriage was like a set of scales constantly balancing itself. And then, at some point, when neither of them was paying attention, they'd tipped so far over into bad, they'd settled there. Now an enormous amount of good would shift them back. An impossible amount of good. The good that was left between them didn't carry enough weight. The kisses that still felt like kisses. The notes Neil stuck to the refrigerator when Georgie got home late, a sleepy cartoon tortoise with a word bubble telling her there were leftover enchiladas on the bottom shelf, shared glances when one of the girls said something silly, the way Neil still put his arm around her when they all went to the movies. He was probably just more comfortable that way. So much of what was still good between them was through Alice and Numi. But Alice and Numi were so solidly between them. Georgie was pretty sure that having kids was the worst thing you could do to a marriage. Sure, you could survive it. You could survive a giant boulder falling on your head. That didn't mean it was good for you. Kids took a fathomless amount of time and energy, and they took it first. They had right of first refusal on everything you had to offer. At the end of the day, after work, after trying to spend some sort of meaningful time with Alice and Numi, Georgie was usually too tired to make things right with Neil before they fell asleep. So things stayed wrong, and the girls just kept giving them something else to talk about, something else to focus on.
something else to love. When Georgie and Neil were smiling at each other, it was almost always over Alice and Numi's heads. And Georgie wasn't sure she'd risk changing that, even if she could. Having kids sent a tornado through your marriage, then made you happy for the devastation. Even if you could rebuild everything just the way it was before, you'd never want to. If Georgie could talk to herself in the past, before the scales tipped, what would she say? What could she say? Love him. Love him more. Would that make a difference? When Georgie was 8 months pregnant with Alice, she and Neil still hadn't settled on a daycare. Georgie thought maybe they should get a nanny. They could almost afford one. She and Seth had just started working on their third show, a CBS sitcom about four mismatched roommates who hung out in a coffee shop. Neil called it Store Brand Friends. Neil was working in pharmaceutical research then. He'd thought about graduate school for a while, but didn't know what he wanted to study, so he got a job in a lab. Then he got another job in another lab. He hated it, but at least he worked better hours than Georgie. Neil was done every day by 5 and home making dinner by 6. There was a nice daycare they were considering on the studio lot. They went and visited, and Georgie put their name on the waiting list. It was going to be fine, Neil said. It was all going to be fine. It was just happening so fast. They'd always assumed they'd have kids someday, but they hadn't really talked through the details. The closest they'd come was on that first date, when Georgie said that she wanted kids and Neil hadn't argued. After they'd been married for 7 years, it seemed like they should probably get on with it. The trying, not the talking. Georgie was already 30, and lots of her friends had had fertility problems. She got pregnant the first month they stopped using condoms. And then it was happening. And they still didn't talk about it. There was no time. Georgie was so tired by the time she got home from the show, she fell asleep most nights on the couch during prime time. Neil would wake her up and walk behind her up the narrow staircase, his hands supporting her hips and his head resting between her shoulder blades. It was all going to be fine, he said. Georgie was 37 weeks along when they went out to celebrate their 8th wedding anniversary. They walked to an Indian restaurant near their house, their old house in Silver Lake, and Neil had talked her into having a glass of wine. One glass of red wine isn't going to hurt at this point. They talked about the studio daycare some more. It was Montessori, Georgie said, for probably the 3rd time that night. And the kids had their own vegetable garden. There was an Indian family sitting one table over. Georgie was terrible at guessing kids' ages before she had her own, but the family had a little girl who must have been about 1.5 years. She was toddling from chair to chair, and she reached out and grabbed Georgie's armrest, smiling up at her triumphantly. The girl wore a pink silk dress and pink silk leggings. She had a cap of black hair and gold studs in her ears. Oh, sorry, the girl's mother said, leaning over and sweeping the child up onto her lap. Georgie set her glass down too hard, and wine splashed out onto the yellow tablecloth.
Are you okay?
Neil asked, his eyes dropping to her stomach. He'd been looking at Georgie differently since she started to show, like she might split open at any time without warning. I'm fine, she said, but her chin was wobbling.
Georgie.
Neil took her hand.
What's wrong?
I don't know what we're doing, she whispered. I don't know why we're doing this.
Why we're doing what?
Having a baby, she said, glancing tearfully over at the pink-swathed toddler. We're just, all we ever talk about is what we're going to do with it when we're not there. Who's going to raise it?
We are.
From 6 to 8 p.m.? Neil sat back in his chair.
I thought you wanted this.
Maybe I was wrong. Maybe I shouldn't get what I want.
Maybe I don't deserve it. Neil didn't tell her it would all be fine. He seemed too shocked to speak, or maybe too angry. He just watched Georgie cry, his brow low, his jaw forward, and refused to finish his chana masala. The next morning, he told her he was quitting his job. "You can't quit your job," Georgie said. She was still lying in bed. Neil had brought her a mug of hot black tea and a plate of scrambled eggs.
"Why not?" he said. "I hate it."
He did hate it. He'd been there 3 years, the pay was terrible, and his boss was an unrepentant egomaniac who liked to brag about curing cancer.
"Yeah," she said, "but do you even want to stay home?"
Neil shrugged.
"You're going to be miserable if we put this baby in daycare."
"I'll get over it," Georgie said, knowing that she would and feeling guilty about that too.
"You don't want me to stay home?"
"I haven't thought about it. Have you?"
"There isn't anything to think about," he said. "I can do this. You can't. We don't need my paycheck."
"But..." Georgie felt like she should argue, but she didn't know where to start. And actually, she really, really liked this idea. She already felt better about the baby, knowing that it would be with Neil, that they wouldn't be turning it... They didn't know the gender yet, but they'd settled on Alice or Eli, over to a stranger 9 hours a day. "You're sure?" she asked, moving to get out of bed. She was huge. Georgie got huge with both pregnancies, and she was having spasms in her lower back every time she sat up. Neil bent in front of her so she could put her arms around his neck, then pulled her upright with his hands on her hips. "It's a big sacrifice," she said.
"Taking care of my own child isn't a sacrifice. It's what parents do."
"Yeah, but are you sure? Don't you want to think about this?" Neil was looking at Georgie's face, not smiling, just meeting her eyes without flinching, so she'd know he was serious.
"I'm positive."
"Okay," she said, and kissed him, already feeling so relieved, and feeling some sort of evolutionary satisfaction, like she'd made the right decision picking this man. He was going to find all the best sticks for their nest and chase off all the predators. They stood together, curled over the mass of baby between them, and Georgie felt like everything was going to be fine. That's how Neil had become a stay-at-home dad. That's how Neil had thrown away his own career before he'd even figured out what he wanted from it. What would happen now, if they stayed together? God, was she really asking that question? Numi would start school next year. Would Neil go back to work then? What would he want to do? What would he want to be? A railroad detective? Chapter 25. Neil didn't call her back. Georgie lay on her bed and watched the phone. She was trying to figure out whether she could see the magic if she looked hard enough. Whether the phone shimmered or glittered or made some sort of spooky, Freaky Friday noise when it was doing its thing. One of the pugs, the boy, wandered into the room. He stood next to the bed, barking until Georgie hauled him up with her. "I don't like you," she said. "I don't even know your name. In my head, I call you the sweaty one and the other one the one who looks like it bit a brick." She did know their names. They were Porky and Petunia. Porky nuzzled his flat face into Georgie's stomach and whimpered. She rubbed her knuckles into the skin at the back of his neck. The door was open, and Heather leaned in. "I'm still fine," Georgie said. Heather had been checking on her ever since they got back from the mall, and Georgie had run to her room to brood over the phone. "I brought you some Pringles," Heather said. "I don't want any Pringles." Heather walked over and sat on the bed. "Well, now you're just lying." She shook a stack of chips out onto the bedspread, and Georgie and Porky started eating them.
When the can was empty, Heather wiped her fingers on Georgie's borrowed velour pants and lay down on the bed next to the dog.
Are you okay?
Georgie didn't answer. She started crying instead. Porky climbed into her lap.
He hates it when people cry, Heather said.
Well, I hate him, so he's making it worse.
You don't hate him.
I do, Georgie said. His face is always wet, and the best thing he smells like is bacon bits.
Why don't you just call Neil?
He probably isn't home. Besides, I don't want to talk to him if he doesn't want to talk to me.
Maybe he'll change his mind.
Georgie tried to smooth out the wrinkles over Porky's eyes.
If you and Neil split up, Heather asked, will you move in back here?
Why, am I in your way?
No, I kind of like having you here. It's like having a sister.
Heather elbowed Georgie.
Hey, you're supposed to say we're not splitting up. Neil's just visiting his mom.
Georgie shrugged. After another minute or so, Heather elbowed her again.
I'm hungry, she said.
Where's mom?
At her work Christmas party.
We could make some more cheesy apples, Georgie said.
I ate all the cheese slices.
Heather turned on her side and rested her head in her hand.
I guess we could order a pizza.
Georgie forced a smile she knew wouldn't happen on its own. That sounds perfect.
I guess I could call Angelo's, Heather said.
Perfect, Georgie said. But tell them we don't want any of those wrong pizzas. If we get a wrong pizza, we're sending it back. Heather smiled at her.
Do you like artichoke hearts?
I love artichoke hearts. I love all hearts. Heather bounced up and pressed redial on her phone. She ordered the pizza, already jiggling her leg and biting at her lip.
I'll wait in the living room for it, she said,
as soon as she ended the call. Good idea, Georgie agreed. Georgie and Porky went back to their melancholy staring, Georgie at the phone, Porky at Georgie. I'm sorry, Georgie said, scratching under his collar, but I really don't like you. She thought of Numi. Numi liked the pugs. She said they looked like really ugly kitties.
Meow,
Numi would say, getting as close to Porky's face as he'd let her, which, to Porky's credit, was pretty close.
Meow,
Georgie said now. Porky sneezed. Both the pugs loved Neil. Georgie knew he fed them table food, because he was a soft touch and because he hated her mom's cooking. As soon as Neil sat down on the couch, the pugs would start nipping at his jeans until he had both of them in his lap. That's how Neil ended up every Thanksgiving afternoon and every other Christmas, with two little girls and two little dogs sacked out in his lap. Neil, tired and bored, but smiling at Georgie from across the room, his dimples playing hide-and-seek with her. She felt the tears welling up on her again. Porky whined. Oh, God, Georgie said, sitting up. I have to do something. She took one more look at the phone. It didn't ring. Come on. She set the dog on the floor and left the room.
What are you doing? Heather asked.
She'd taken down her hair and spritzed the curls with something, and she was waiting by the door, literally leaning against the frame. Losing my mind, Georgie said.
Can't you do that in your room?
I thought you were worried about me.
I was. I will be. But now,
Heather pointed emphatically at the door, there's a pizza coming. That's what happens when you order one.
Right,
Heather said, goggling her eyes at Georgie.
The pizza will be here any minute.
Oh, right, Georgie said. The doorbell rang. Heather jumped.
I'll just get my clothes out of the dryer.
Heather nodded.
It might take a while,
Georgie continued.
You just
shout or something,
when the pizza gets here.
Heather nodded again. The doorbell rang again. Georgie felt like telling Heather that none of this mattered, that her pizza boy dramatics were nothing compared to Georgie's magic, life-destroying phone of destiny. But instead, she turned deliberately toward the laundry room. As soon as Georgie was through the door, she heard the whimpering. Porky was standing outside the open dryer, barking at it. "Damn it, Heather." Heather must have let Petunia into the dryer again to take a nap on Georgie's warm, clean clothes. Georgie stomped down the back steps, irritated with every living thing in the house. Porky looked up at her and barked. "What's the problem?" Georgie asked. "Do you want to drool all over my clothes, too?" She leaned over the dryer door to look for the other one, lumpy old bit of brick. That's when Georgie saw the blood. "Oh, God." Porky started barking again. Georgie crouched in front of the dryer, trying not to block the light. All she could see was a pile of clothes streaked with blood. Neil's Metallica t-shirt was on top, moving. She pulled it out of the way. Petunia was curled underneath, gnawing at something. Something dark and wriggling. "Oh, God. Oh, God. Heather!" Georgie shouted. She jumped up and ran back into the house. "Heather!" When she got to the kitchen, Heather was standing at the front door, staring at Georgie like she was planning how to kill her later. The pizza boy was standing... Oh. The pizza boy was a girl. Smaller than Heather, wearing dark jeans, a short-sleeved white t-shirt under thin leather suspenders, and a ball cap that said Angelo's. The girl looked kind of like Wesley Crusher, but prettier and with nicer arms. It was a good look. "Huh," Georgie thought, then said out loud, "Heather, it's Petunia."
"What?"
"Petunia's having a baby."
"What?"
"Petunia," Georgie said more urgently. "She's having puppies in the dryer."
"No, she's not. She's having a C-section in 2 weeks."
"Great," Georgie shouted. "I'll go tell her."
"Oh, God," Heather shouted back.
She ran past Georgie toward the laundry room. Georgie ran behind her as far as the door. Heather knelt in front of the dryer and immediately screamed. Porky was running back and forth across the tile floor. It sounded like someone rattling their fingernails against a metal desk. He was already hoarse from barking.
"Oh, God, oh, God, oh, God," Heather chanted.
"Whoa," someone said. The pizza girl stepped around Georgie on the stairs.
"Whoa,"
she said again, crouching behind Heather.
"She's gonna die," Heather said.
The girl touched her shoulder. "She's not."
"She is. Their heads are too big. She has to have a C-section. Oh, God."
Heather took a few crazy breaths.
"Oh, my God."
"She's going to be fine," Georgie said. "She was built for this."
"She wasn't," Heather said, crying now. "Pugs are bred to be useless. We have to take her to the vet."
"I think it's too late for that," Pizza Girl said, looking into the dryer.
"There are puppies in there."
Porky ran by the dryer again, and the girl scooped him up, running her hand over his skull and whispering, "Hush." "Right," Georgie said. Heather was still crying and breathing like she was making every effort to pass out. "Right," Georgie said again. "Heather, move."
"Why?"
"I'm going to help Petunia."
"You don't even like her."
"Move." The pizza girl tugged on Heather's elbow, and Heather moved back. "My OB didn't like me either," Georgie murmured. "Get out your phone, Heather. Google pugs in labor."
"I would if I had a smartphone," Heather snarled.
"I've got it," ever more impressive pizza girl said. "Here," she handed Porky to Heather.
"Maybe you guys could get some clean towels."
"Have you done this before?" Heather asked, hopefully, taking the dog and wiping her face in its fur.
"No," the girl said, "but I watch Animal Planet."
"Google," Georgie said, reaching into the dryer. Petunia had burrowed under the t-shirt again and was shivering, worrying something with her mouth. Georgie tried to nudge more clothes away so she could see.
Okay, okay, said the pizza girl. It's loading. Okay, here we go. Giving birth can be especially challenging for both pugs and pug owners.
So far, so good, Georgie said. It's too dark. I can't see anything.
Oh.
The girl held her keychain over Georgie's shoulder.
There's a flashlight.
That's handy. Georgie took the heavy keychain and found the stainless steel light.
It helps when I'm delivering pizzas at night to get the credit card numbers.